I am the Mishto Daiton Lubarti. Maya Bhayam Datam Amusha Deva. Maya Bhayam Datam Amusha Deva. Maya Bhayam Datam Amusha Deva. I am a Mishto Daito Nuvarti. Maya Bhayam Datam Amusha Deva. Sampada Sampadyatam Tad Bhavata Prasado. Sampadyatam Tad Bhavata Prasado. Sampadyatam Tad Bhavata Prasado. Yata Hi Te Daitya Patao Prasada. Yata Hi Te Daitya Patao Prasada. Yata Hi Te Daitya Patao Prasada. Sampadyatam tad bhavata prasado. Yata hi te daitya pato prasada. Ayam mamishto daito nuvarti. Maya bhayam tatam mamushadeva. Sampadyatam tad bhavata prasado. Yata hi te daitya patao prasada. I am a mishto daitya nuvarti. Maya bhayam tatam amushadeva. Sampadyatam tad bhavata prasado. Yata hi te daitya pato prasada. I am a mishto daito nuvarti. Maya bhayam dattam amushadeva. Sampadyatam tad bhavata prasado. Yata hi te daitya pato prasada.
Sampadyatam tad bhavata prasado.
I am
this.
Mama.
My.
Ishta.
Favored.
Daita.
Very dear.
Does anyone know where else this word appears? It's a verse we chant fairly regularly. There's Daita. Huh? That's one verse. In the Mangalacharan, there's one verse. Sri Bhasha Manavi Devi, Daitaya Kripab Daya. So it's talking about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's very dear to Bhasha Manavi Devi. And who's Bhasha Manavi Devi? Srimati Radharani, yeah. Very dear. And also the in Puri, during the period of Rath Yatra, what are those persons who take care of Jagannath? Daitas, yeah. They're very dear to Lord Jagannath, even though they actually have no qualification. You know, externally they appear to have no qualification, somehow or other, Lord Jagannath, because they're very dear to him, he engages them in the service. And they come from different versions. Some people say they come from background or taking care of pigs, and some people say they're fishermen. Yeah, but anyhow, they're not Brahmins. But yeah, still, because they're dear to Jagannath.
The sons of Diti are called
Daityas. Huh?
The sons of Diti are called
Daityas. Daityas, that's a different word, though. It's D-A-I. This is, as you see here, it says D-A-Y-I-T-O. But as you see down the last line, it says, actually, that's misspelled. That's Daitya, not Daita. It's D-A-I.
Oh, I see.
That was the third word, the last line is misspelled. Yeah. Daitya, yeah, they're the sons of Diti. And these Adityas are the sons of Aditi. Anuvarti. Follower. Maya. By me. Sampadyatam. Oh, sorry. I skipped a line. Abhayam. Fearlessness. Datam. Given. Amusha,
his.
Deva,
O Lord.
Sampadyatam, please let it be granted. Tat,
therefore.
Bhavata,
your.
Prasadha,
grace.
Yata,
as.
He,
indeed.
Te,
your.
Daitya,
of the demons.
Bato,
for the chief.
Prahlad.
Prasada,
grace.
Grace.
Translation. This Banasura is my dear and faithful follower, and I have awarded him freedom from fear. Therefore, my Lord, please grant him your mercy, just as you showed mercy to Prahlada, the Lord of the demons. Please repeat. This Banasura is my dear and faithful follower.
This Banasura is my dear and faithful follower.
And I have awarded him freedom from fear.
And I have awarded him freedom from fear.
Therefore, my Lord,
please grant him your mercy.
Just as you showed mercy to Prahlad,
the Lord of the demons.
So this is almost the end of the chapter. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 verses left. You may wind up reading them, I'm not sure yet. So we see here that Lord Shiva, he's concluding his prayers to Lord Krishna. And as we know, there was a fight between Banasura and his followers, and also the members of the Vrishni dynasty, because he had captured... Who did he capture? Remember who Banasura captured? Who's Aniruddha? Not the temple president. Krishna's grandson. Whose son is Aniruddha? Prajumna. He's the son of Prajumna. Right, so he's Krishna's grandson. And why did he capture Aniruddha? In whose room? What was his daughter's name? Kusha. Huh? Usha, that's right. Yeah, Usha. I thought you were saying Kusha. Usha. Yeah, Usha. He found her in his daughter's room. An interesting story behind how that all came about, but we discussed that in the past. Now here we see that Lord Shiva is trying to supplicate the Lord with prayers, and he's offering very, very humble prayers here to the Lord. And of course, because we see that Lord Shiva, he's actually one of the Mahajans. You know what a Mahajan is? Huh? One who established religious principles. Actually, is that correct? That a Mahajan is one who establishes religious principles? Who establishes religious principles? Yeah, what does it say in the sixth canto? Dharmam tu saksha bhagavat prinyatam. That only Krishna actually gives religious principles. Now, Mahajan is one who sets a great example. He as it says, Mahajana yena gata sapanta. They chalk out the path we follow. They give us the guidance. They understand the religious principles. That is the situation of Mahajan. They actually understand religious principles. Because we see, especially in Kali Yuga, that religious principles are not very easy to understand. One time, Shruti Kirti, he was asking Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, he says, how do you distinguish between a principle and a detail? Because we see, people quite often get confused between principles and details. It's very hard to understand sometimes. He says, that requires a little intelligence. And we see that all the time, people are getting things confused. You know, what is a detail? What is a principle? Just like there's a group of, I don't want to get too much into, other things, but there are a group of devotees who are presenting a philosophy. They call it a philosophy, but actually it's just mental speculation. It's not philosophy at all. And one of the things they use to establish their philosophy is they say, but Prabhupada, he altered the principles of devotional service because he's an acharya. An acharya can alter the principles of devotional service. And then they say, and then you ask them for what is one of the principles of devotional service that Prabhupada holds? They say, oh, Prabhupada introduced the principle of Brahmacharini Ashram. But is that a principle of devotional service? Does Rupa Goswami discuss this in the Nectar of Devotion? We see he gives 64 principles of devotional service. From memory, it's probably it's chapter 4 and 5 or chapter 5 and 6 in the Nectar of Devotion. You'll see he gives principles of devotional service. And then chapter 9, 10, 11 and 12, I think from memory, then he explains these in detail. But he gives these 64 principles of devotional service. But I don't see anywhere there where there's a discussion of Brahmacharini Ashram. So they're saying that, Prabhupada was an acharya. He's able to change. And the principle they're trying to establish is that Prabhupada changed the initiation system. He changed the law, what is called the law, Prabhupada in a letter he calls the law of disciplic succession. They're saying he changed this. But Prabhupada, there's a conversation where Srila Prabhupada is saying, is one who's acharya, he follows the principles of devotional service. If he changes the principles, then he is not acharya, he is rascal. So even one who's a great acharya, like Rupa Goswami, what did Rupa Goswami do? He took the principles that were given by Lord Chaitanya. You can read them in the Madhya Lila from about chapter 20 through to about chapter 26. And he's explaining to Rupa Goswami all the principles of devotional service. And he's telling him, you write books about these things. Actually, to Sanatana Goswami, not Rupa Goswami. He's saying, you write books about these things. He's explaining, he's given the principles of devotional service. And then he's asking Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, to fill in the details in their conversations. And we see, you look at Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. What is that? Rupa Goswami is giving the principles of bhakti, and he's taking references from so many other scriptures to support. You just look through any section of the Brahmas of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and you'll see he's giving so many references from Srimad Bhagavatam. He's giving so many references from so many different scriptures supporting the principles of devotional service that Lord Chaitanya wanted Gaudiya Vaishnavas to follow. I mean, because if you go through the Shastras, you'll see there's so many different things there. It's not that there's just whatever we follow in ISKCON, that's the only thing that's in the Shastra. There's so many things there. It's unlimited. And as it says in that verse, Tako Pratishta Shrutayo, it says Shrutayo Vibhinna. Shrutayo means the Vedas. Vibhinna. So many branches, so many departments. There's over 100,000 books in the Veda. And they're presenting so many different things. We see, just like with the Puranas, that there's 18 Mahapuranas. And they're divided into three divisions. There's six Mahapuranas for devotees or for persons who are influenced by the mode of goodness. Sometimes we hear people say that there's 16 six Puranas in goodness, six Puranas in passion, six Puranas in ignorance. It's actually a misunderstanding. How can the Shastra be in the mode of ignorance? No, these Shastras are for persons who are influenced by the mode of goodness or influenced by the mode of passion or influenced by the mode of ignorance. Yeah? So obviously, Puranas that are suited for persons who are influenced by the mode of ignorance are not suitable for the Satvatas or for those persons who are influenced by the mode of goodness or transcendental to these things. They're not for those persons. And the same as we see Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya glorified it as being Amala Purana. This is not for persons who are in the mode of ignorance. They cannot understand it. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam is what's the word he uses? Paramahang, what's that verse? I can't remember the verse. Anyhow, Lord Chaitanya is describing how the Bhagavatam is actually for Paramahansas. It's for persons who are completely purified and fixed in Krishna consciousness. So then why do we read the Srimad Bhagavatam? Are we Paramahansas? Anyone, any Paramahansas here? No? The Prabhupada is here, he's a Paramahansa. Because we're on the path of devotional service, because we're on the process of purification, because we have taken shelter of the process of devotional service, therefore, this is a suitable literature for us. And actually, as it describes in the Bhagavatam itself, see, Bhagavatam is one of those literatures where its glories are self-evident. And its glories, it propounds its own glories. It's not like, you know, just like if you get some person, they start propounding their own glories, how wonderful they are, like, you know, 99.9% of materialists do, isn't it? All they do is talk about themselves all the time. You just listen to anyone speaking. What's their favourite topic? Me. Yeah? They just talk about themselves all the time. Actually, devotees are not like this. Devotees like to glorify Krishna, and they like to glorify other devotees. So if we saw someone who's like that, and they're glorifying themselves all the time, then we start to think, oh, this person is a little bit puffed up. They have a pretty, you know, inflated perception of themselves. Yet, when it comes to something like the Bhagavatam, because we're accepting the Bhagavatam as the topmost literature, then when the Bhagavatam is telling about its own glories, we don't think, oh, this is just, you know, Vyasadeva's just trying to, you know, sell his own work, so to speak. You know, if you get the author, they go around and they tell you about all the glories about their book, just so they can sell. It's not that the book's any good, they're just trying to sell the thing. You know? But Vyasadeva's not just trying to sell a book. I mean, it's not like he's trying to get on the bestseller list or something like that. No, he's actually, this book, as he describes, was it Krishna Swa Dhammapagade Dharma Gyani Visya Kala Nastra Dishamisha Pura Naka Udinodha. Very, very nice statement. This Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun. Just, you know, you look at the sun, so brilliant. You can't actually look directly at the sun for very long, can you? If you look at the sun for a long time, your eyes become damaged. So brilliant, you cannot look at it. The Bhagavatam, it is actually more brilliant than the sun. And it says why it's so brilliant. Why it's so, it says, persons who have lost their ignorance due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali, they'll get light from this Purana. What does it say? Krishna Sva Dhamma Bhagati Dhamma. So Dhamma, he's gone back to his Dhamma. So, you know, after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, coming by religion, you know, religious principles also went back with Krishna. What do we see left in Kali? Practically no religious principles. What is left? One leg. What is the one leg that's left? Huh? Truthfulness. And even that. Huh? Just go to a shop, you know, and buy something and see how truthful people are. Huh? Try and find out what the ingredients are. I heard something interesting the other day. For those of you who go to India or like to buy ghee from India, there's a thing on one of the websites there. Someone, I didn't, because I don't go on this website, but someone wrote me a letter and asked me about ghee in India. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. Why are they asking about ghee in India? So I pursued it and found out. There's this video that was put out just recently. And that there was some TV crew in India had gone into the ghee factories in India. And what did they find in there? Butter and things like, no. They found animal corpses hanging up. And so what these places are doing is they're boiling down animals for the fat, and then they're, you know, animals' bodies, for the fat to make ghee. And they're selling it to you. 100% pure butter fat. They're telling you it is pure ghee.
Pure adulteration.
Huh?
Pure adulteration, pure.
Yeah, the adulteration, this is exactly true. See, Indians have, you know, they have an interesting way of twisting words around, yeah? It's 100% pure. Yes, 100% pure adulteration. Huh? It's just like, you know, anyhow, I mean, you see, you buy a chutter or something, it says 100% pure. It doesn't say what it is, it's just 100% pure. Because this word pure carries a lot of weight. And Kali Yuga is like that. As Kali Yuga progresses more and more, as you see, you know, the description is there in the first canto of how Dharma, he's standing there on one leg and the leg is shaking. Huh? Shaking. So honesty in this age, truthfulness in this age, very shaky. Yeah? It's so hard to find a truthful person. But actually we see, Prabhupada, he pointed out that in this age, the qualities of Brahmana, the two most important qualities of a Brahmana in this age are, who knows? Cleanliness, Socham, and Arjavam, honesty. These are the two most important principles of Brahminical culture in this age. And therefore, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as we are, you know, we're trying to develop godly qualities, the cultivation of the mode of goodness is essential. It's not just like an optional thing. It's not like, oh, it's a nice thing to do. It's essential for cultivating godly qualities. Just like we see, there's a nice purport, 13th chapter of the Gita, I think it's from verses 6 to 12, where Lord Krishna is describing the qualities of a devotee. And one of the qualities he quotes is socham. So in the purport, Prabhupada says something very, very interesting about socham. He says that cleanliness is essential for making spiritual advancement. Not optional, not something nice you add along because it looks good or something like that. Just like we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he talks about in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita in chapter 10, he talks about the principles of bhakti, and he's discussing different things, and he says that cleanliness is actually not a principle of bhakti, but it's an ornament or an adornment. So it helps to make bhakti look more attractive. Yet Prabhupada's pointing out that it's essential for making spiritual advancement. So it's one of these things that is not actually a principle of bhakti, but in order for us to cultivate the mode of goodness, we need to cultivate this purity, not just cleanliness, but also, because when I was listening to an interesting class yesterday from Bhaktivedanta Purimaj, and he was discussing cleanliness and purity. Now, in Western culture, Maharaj was making a very interesting point, and we do see this. It's not this is just some sort of obscure point that we don't see. Someone will, you know, he was using the example of a packet of potato crisps or potato chips. And you see, people, they'll eat the chips, you know, and they'll wipe their hands on the back of their jean, and that's it. They go on to their business, and they shake hands with people and give people things. And they can say, there's nothing on my hand, it's clean. But for a Brahmana, how could you do something like that? It's like, you know, how can you touch someone? How can you touch anything after you've eaten? Or even for someone who's a pujari, you offer something to Krishna, just like when you're offering arti, you offer arti to Krishna, you offer the incense to Krishna, that's prasad. So then when you put the prasad down, how can you touch anything else until you purify your hand? Because what happens then is that other item becomes contaminated. So for a Brahmana, for a devotee, the cleanliness is more subtle. It's not just the gross thing, it looks clean. There's many subtle aspects of it which are maybe not perceived by the gross senses, but someone who's actually cultured will see that, or they see the way people do things, and they're, you know, very unpleasant. You know? And there's many subtle effects of cleanliness and subtle effects from lack of cleanliness. Just like my wife and myself had an experience in
Vrindavan. Was that the year before last when everyone had pink eye? It was the funniest thing, you know, funniest thing. They had this idea in India that you know what pink eye is? Conjunctivitis? Anyone see conjunctivitis? Probably many of us have had it, right? Where your eye sort of gets all gummed up with this exudation. And so they have this notion in India that conjunctivitis is spread by looking at people. Yeah? So you look at, say, if I've got conjunctivitis, I look at you and you look at me, you've got conjunctivitis. So you know what they do? I remember going into the kitchen and we walk in there and everyone's got sunglasses on. And we thought, what's going on here? You know? And then we found out they all had conjunctivitis. And I was asking, why do you wear the sunglasses? And they say, oh, because conjunctivitis is spread by looking. But does anyone know how conjunctivitis is spread? By touch. You spread it by touch. It's a highly, what do they call it, a contact transmittable disease? By contact. It's just by contact. It's very transmittable. So everyone was getting it. Everyone. I mean, just everyone. Like, you know, just like it was like this sunglass epidemic was spreading throughout Vrindavan. But my wife and myself didn't get it. And why? Because we were discussing, you know, when we saw this, we said, we have to make this endeavor to be very, very clean. Every time you touch something, you wash your hands. Every time anything you do, you wash. When we're cooking, we wash. When you eat, you wash. Wash the plate first, wash the plate afterwards. So it's like this. We need to be so clean. Just like now we see that there's a little bit of an epidemic in our brahmachari ashram. You know, a lot of devotees are bringing down this flu, coming down with the flu, which is actually, from what I've heard, when I was up in Sydney, I heard the news or something. There were some statistics up there. Well, not statistics, but they're saying that this flu is a very, very heavy flu, that people are actually dying from this flu. So the thing is like, you know, when you live in a communal environment, just like here, we live in a communal environment. We're all washing our plates at the same sink. And oftentimes there's boxes of plates underneath the sink, and these plates are being used by different people. You know, sometimes we have, you know, people coming from St. Kilda, down here grabbing these plates and you know, I mean, let's not be an illusion here, the people are not particularly clean. So it means that, you know, when we're in this communal environment, not that we start, you know, pointing fingers at others and saying, oh, you're Murchi, you're this, you know, that's not going to help anyone. We personally need to take up standards of cleanliness and be very, very strict in ourselves, you know, making sure that we're always washing our hands. You know, you drink water, we wash our hands. We eat, we wash our hands. Not just wipe it on the back of your dhoti, your pants, and go ahead and do something else. And we find that by being clean in all these different things, then we'll be less inclined to diseases. And it helps us develop the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, as Prabhupada would point out, is a springboard to the transcendental platform. Because you cannot cultivate goodness from the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. Not possible, because the mind is too disturbed. Yeah? The mode of goodness helps the mind to become peaceful, and in that state we're able to meditate upon Krishna. So we see here that Lord Shiva, the Mahajan, he's offering prayers to Lord Krishna, and he's trying to supplicate the Lord, because he's seeing that his devotee, Banasura, is in a very difficult situation. He's just had, how many arms did Krishna cut off? Yeah, he had 1,000 arms. He left him with 4. Yeah? And I was just reflecting on this the other day. You know, you can imagine, like, if someone cut off your arm, how would you feel? He cut off my arm. Probably a little bit more than that, you know. But these kshatriyas of bygone times were not just like, you know, like nowadays, you know, they go to war and it's like someone gets shot or someone gets killed. It like makes the headlines, you know, they want to leave the war zone immediately because someone's been killed. I mean, these kshatriyas in these days were very, very, you know, powerful, extraordinary people. And so Banasura, he's just had, you know, 996 of his 1,000 arms chopped off. And he's still ready to fight. It's not like, you know, he's giving up the fight because he had a few arms cut off. And Lord Shiva's seeing that he's in a very, very difficult situation. He's also seeing that, oh, I may have offended Krishna here. Because he understands who Krishna is, but he's explaining to Krishna, but I took the side of Banasura out of affection for him. Please don't be offended by this, you know, because I understand who you are. I mean, no illusion. You know, Lord Shiva's making that point here. And in one of the previous verses, he was saying, it's interesting interesting verse. What about nectar and poison? He's making this. Oh, yeah, here it is in verse 42. The mortal who rejects you, his true self, dear most friend and Lord, for the sake of sense objects, whose nature is just the opposite, refuses nectar and instead consumes poison. So he's making a very interesting analogy here, which is used quite often, by our acharyas in the Bhagavatam. We see that this kind of analogy is used quite often, and it's comparing the nectar of Krishna consciousness and anything else as being poison. And we see that, like Narottam Das Thakur says, I have knowingly drank poison. And it's interesting here, but actually Lord Shiva's talking about himself. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Shiva's referring to himself, because I've refused the nectar of taking shelter of your lotus feet, and I'm knowingly drinking poison by supporting my dear follower, Banasura. And he's saying in the verse in discussion today, is that, out of affection for him, I could not give him up. I could not refuse his service, because that Lord Shiva became very, very pleased, as we see earlier on, it's discussed. Lord Shiva became very, very pleased because when he was dancing one time, Banasura was playing the drums for him. And you can imagine, as we were discussing, 1,000 arms, he can play some pretty fancy drum beats. And so, Lord Shiva became very, very pleased with his service. And he's saying here that, that I've sort of given up taking shelter of you, and I fought against you to support my follower. Therefore, I've knowingly drunk poison. And we see, as Lord Shiva is pointing out here in verse 42, that those who take shelter of material nature or sense objects, they can actually not understand the goal of devotional service. And we see that's given there by Prahlad Maharaj. He's a very, very important verse. Prabhupada would quote a lot, Nate vidu swata katim hibishnum durashaya ye bahi ratamanina andayatanda yupani namana ste pishatantram urudam nibada. Very nice verse. He's saying, Na te vidu, they do not know. Na, not. Vidu, no. Swarta katim hi vishnum, the ultimate swarta katim. Interesting word. I was listening to a class the other day, Prabhupada was explaining this. Essentially, Prabhupada was translating it as meaning their own self-interest. Swarta. Swa means own. Artha means, like we talk about dharma, artha, karma, moksha. So artha means like, not just economic development, but it means like benefit. The benefit you get from something. So swata katim. Gati means go. As we see, what's that verse in the Gita? Famous verse. 1866. Who knows that verse? You must all know that verse. What's it? Savadamam prityajya mam ekam saranam. I was aham tam sarva papiya moksha sim mah. Was that verse? Which is the verse that talks about Kathim at the end of the Gita? I thought it was that verse. Maybe it's the other one before. No, I thought it was that verse. Anyhow, I'm confused. Anyhow, there's a verse in the Gita where it talks about the gati. This is braja. That's right, which is used in the same way. Yeah. But Krishna talks about that in the Gita, about the gati, the destination, or how you go. Yeah? He actually uses braja, that's right. He uses braja in that word, the same as gati, braja, go. So we see that this word gati means the destination. It says swata gatim hi vishnum. And it's same here, saying he, indeed, vishnum. The supreme destination is Vishnu. But a person who doesn't know this, why doesn't he know this? It's because he's thinking that sense gratification is the goal of life. He's so consumed in sense gratification, he's just like, as Narottam Das Thakur says, he's knowingly drinking poison. There's a kevala vishera banda. He's knowingly drinking this poison rather than taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Knowingly drinking this poison because he's thinking that this sense gratification, this is everything. He doesn't know the supreme destination. There's na te vidu swata katim vidu rashaya bye bahirata manina. Durashaya, this bad intelligence, bad shelter. Dura ashaya, bad shelter. Dhirasha ye bahir atta manina. Andaya tanda. Anda. Anda means well. Blind well. They fall down into a blind well. Andaya tanda upaniya manas te tipisha tandram uru damni badha. It says uru. Uru means very strong. Damna badha. They're bound up by these very, very strong ropes of the three modes of material nature. Because they don't understand what the goal of life is. Anyone who's acting this material world and thinking that sense gratification is the supreme goal, the swartha gatim, this is what they're thinking. They're thinking that, you know, if I just take shelter of my relatives, you know, if I have some difficulty, you know, I call out for my wife, I call out for my husband, I call out for my children. Just like we see with Ajamil. You know, he was in a very difficult situation. He was giving up his body. And what did he see? He saw the Yamadutas coming. Horrible living entities. Horrible, very, very fearful. You know, they don't smell very nice. They wear, you know, really, really disheveled clothes. And they're very fearsome-looking creatures. Actually, one time I was in Russia, in St. Petersburg. And I was going around to these... Madam Mahanprabhu, he was taking me around to show me some of the things in St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg is a very, very beautiful city. Many, many old buildings built by the Tsars and that. And it used to be called the Paris of the East. And he took me to a museum. And it was a natural history museum where the Tsar had collected things from all over the world. And they had this big, big, I don't know if you call it a statue, but this big form of a Rakshasa. Coppery hair and the teeth were all, you know, like in different angles and stuff like that. Bulging eyes. Very fearful looking thing. You could see it straight away. This is a Rakshasa. Yeah? So also the Yamadutas are very, very fearful, fearsome looking creatures. And you know, sometimes they have dogs with them. They call them the hounds of hell. You know, they're snapping at people's heels as they're, you know, taking them down to the lower planets and stuff like that. And so Ajamil, he saw the Yamadutas and they come to rip him out of his body. Very fearful condition. You could just imagine, you know. And so he called out for his dearly beloved son. But it just so happened by the arrangement of Krishna. It wasn't an accident. You can't do these things accidentally. By the arrangement of Krishna, he had named his dearly beloved son Narayan. So as the Yamadutas were calling out, he's calling out for this fallible soldier. He's calling out for his son. Oh, my son, save me. Oh, Narayan. And just by saying the name of the Lord, a primary name, not just a secondary name, like we have all these different secondary names, like the creator, the preserver, the maintainer, all these are secondary names, but a primary name of Krishna, Narayana, the one who's lying on the couch, who's talking about a person, he's not talking about his activity, he's talking about a name, just like Krishna, Govinda, Narayan, all these are primary names of Krishna. So when you call out a primary name, it has quite a powerful effect. So by calling out the Lord's name, it protected him from the Yamadutas, and the Vishnudutas came to stop them. So we see the point I'm making here is that when one's in a difficult situation, they take shelter of the fallible soldiers, which is described by Prahlad Maharaj. This is always taking shelter of these fallible soldiers. But the fallible soldiers, you know, the husband, the wife, the children, the parents, what can they do to save us? At the moment of death, what can they do? They can do nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yet, it's one of my favorite lines in a verse, in this verse where Prahlad Maharaj is talking about these fallible soldiers, and he says, what's that? I've forgotten it. Pashanapi na pashati. Very, very nice, simple phrase. He says, even though seeing, they do not see. Even though seeing that every day so many people are entering into the abode of Yamaraj. Every day, you know, thousands and thousands and millions of people are dying and going to the abode of Yamaraj. It's still they're thinking, oh, this will not happen to me. When Yamaraj came, disguised to Yudhisthira Maharaj as a dwarf, you know that story when they went down to, when they were traveling, after they left Varanavatar and they were traveling south, in India, and they've been traveling for many, many days, and they're very thirsty. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, he sent the twins out to find some water, and they came upon a lake. And when they came to the lake, they went down to drink the water, and they heard this unembodied voice in the sky saying, "You know, I'm the pride of this lake. If you drink from the water without answering my questions, you will fall down dead. And they didn't take any notice. They said, just an embodied voice. But then they drank the water, they fell down dead. And the same thing happened. They sent Bhima. They sent Bhima. Same thing happened. Of course, Bhima's like looking around for someone to fight. He's, you know, very, very strong, powerful, proud Kshatriya. Same thing. He drank water, he fell down dead. Then Arjuna came. Same thing. He heard the unembodied voice. And because Arjuna was an expert archer, he had this ability where he could hear a voice or hear the sound and he'd be able to hit it without seeing. So he started to fire his arrows, but he couldn't actually make out where the target was. Yeah? So then finally Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was getting a bit concerned because all his brothers had gone. And he came to the lake and he found them. And they're all dead. And he was thinking, my gosh, you know, how are we going to actually win this war without my brothers? I can't do it on my own. I mean, you know, Bhima, Arjuna, they're all, you know, dead. And then so same thing happened to him. He went to have a drink. And he heard this unembodied voice in the sky. He says, you know, I am the proprietor of this lake, and if you drink water from this lake without answering my questions, you'll fall down dead. And, you know, he was a little bit more grave, Yudhisthira Maharaj, a little bit more peaceful in the mind. And he could see, well, you know, this person has killed my brothers without, and it looks like no fight, not a mark on their bodies. Very powerful person. I better answer his questions. Yeah. So then he answered the questions, and one of the questions he answered is, what is the most amazing thing in the world? And he replied, he says, the most amazing thing is that every day so many thousands of people are going to the abode of Yamaraj, but still a person thinks, I will not go to the abode of Yamaraj. Pashanapi na pashati. They're seeing. Every day they're seeing. You just go to any hospital, you go to the Alfred Hospital and see how many people die every day. Just in a hospital. They're going to the abode of Yamaraj. They don't die in glorious circumstances. You hear sometimes the way that people die in this world, not very nice situations. I remember when I was in India last time, I heard about this famous police chief captain or something, I'm not exactly sure what he was. And famous in is it Kerala maybe? What state's Mysore? Is it Karnataka or Kerala?
Karnataka.
So anyhow, this famous police captain, he was capturing the sandalwood bandits, the people who poached the poachers, right? And he was just frustrated with the court system, so he didn't bother, you know, arresting them and taking them to court and getting them tried, because he knew they'd just pay a bribe and get out, you know, 10 minutes later. So he would kill them. But the way he would kill them was quite gruesome. Like one time I read this one report, it was in India Today, I think, whatever the magazine is. He would get tractors, four tractors, connect one to each limb, and get the tractors to drive in opposite directions, just, you know, pull them apart. Very, very gruesome way of dying. And that's, you know, that's just the ones we hear about. You know, I mean, there's so many other things that happen. So, you know, not auspicious death. So we can understand from things like this that they're probably not going back to the spiritual world. More likely they're taking, you know, an inauspicious birth. So the point being is that every day so many people are dying in very, very inauspicious and difficult ways. And yet people are thinking somehow or other that I'm not going to die. The scientists are going to come up with some cure and I'm not going to die. But has it happened yet? Have we seen anyone who hasn't died? In this world, Prabhupada was... I'm always astounded, you know, at how Prabhupada would sum up things with one line. He said, material world, death rate, 100%. Everyone dies, guaranteed. No one has survived yet. So we need to see the reality of it. And we need to see, you know, that, you know, that so many people are clinging to these fallible soldiers, thinking the scientists are going to save me, thinking my relatives are going to save me. You know, they're taking shelter of insignificant, impermanent things. And if you take shelter of something impermanent, then you will meet with misery at some point. Dukkalayam ashashvatam. This is the nature of this world. Everything is temporary and full of misery. That is the nature of this world. So if we're looking for a permanent situation, then we need to take shelter of something which is permanent. And nothing in this world is permanent. Or nothing of this world, should I say. There are things in this world that are permanent. But nothing of this world is permanent. It is all temporary because that is the nature of this world. Therefore, we take shelter of the nature of Krishna consciousness. And as that verse I was discussing from Prahlad Maharaj, he says, "Andaya tandaya upaniyama." They're falling into these blind wells. It's just like a blind person. Anda means blind. Andaya tandaya upaniyama. Just like a blind person being led by another blind person. They miss the right path and they fall into a ditch. Yeah. I remember once I was in Russia, maybe it was in Ukraine, and the temple, the next door neighbors had dug this big hole. But there was no, like here, if they dig a big hole, the law says you've got to put a fence around it so no one can fall into it. Not in Russia, they just dig a big hole. And there's no fence, no nothing. And like the path coming out of the back of the temple went right beside the hole. So you could just imagine if someone blind comes out, they're not aware of the hole, they just fall into the hole. Not a problem, So, I remember speaking about that in class. So the thing is, just like we see, if a blind person is leading another blind person, which is the situation in this world, why do they use the word blind? It's a very important thing. It's because in this world, everyone is blind. They're blinded by the modes of nature. They're blinded by their material desires. They cannot actually see their own benefit. They cannot see what is the best thing for them. They think if I vote for, just like, there's elections coming up right now, you get all this rubbish in the mail, My wife was making the point yesterday, and I thought it was an interesting point, You never hear from these guys for years and years and years at a time, And then when it comes up election time, they write you all these letters saying, we're really thankful for your support. And who are you? Never heard of you before, Just got, like the mailbox is full of all this rubbish and all these politicians trying to get your vote. And so people, they're bewildered by these things. They say, this guy's a good guy, he did this. And they write this whole big list of all the things they've done. It's quite foolish. I mean, you've done this? They're just trying to make it, it's just like, it talks in the Gita about, how the living entities bewildered by the modes of material nature think themselves a doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by the, what's that, Purusha Prakti Hosti, Bhukti Prakti Jankaranam Guna Sangosa, what's that? Thank you. Devish Gurumai Mamevijay Prabhatante. Bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities which are in factually carried out by the modes of material nature. So it's the same that these politicians are presenting themselves as like, they're the doers, we've done everything for you. And foolish people.